Hey everybody, it's Tom from A Cast of the Past, your favorite time-hopping video game podcast, and I'm here to remind you that on Saturday, November 7th, 2020, Josh and I will be 24-hour live streaming video games for a good cause. Through Extra Life, we are going to be benefiting the Janet Weiss Children's Hospital at Geisinger. We're going to be playing some crowd-pleasing favorites such as Super Smash Bros., Among Us, Fall Guys, Mario Kart, and more. Plus, we're going to be doing some unique things during the stream. We're going to be playing a live D&D session. We're going to have a movie watch along. We are going to record a live episode of this podcast during the stream. And you can buy in for some fun activities. There will be a tier list of donations. Any dollar you give will be appreciated, but the more you give, the more you get. There'll be some special interesting things to see. So come on out on Saturday, November 7th from 3 p.m. till 3 p.m. the next day. It's going to be 24 hours of awesomeness, and we hope to see you there.
Welcome back, everybody, to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm TP.
And today, we are talking about the most spookiest game that we could talk about in October that's not even a game. Like, how crazy is this?
Well, that's an interesting conversation that we'll have to have as we discuss what, Josh?
Today, we will be talking about P.T.
Yes, the 2014 playable teaser. And Josh, this is going to be an interesting one because I don't think we've ever talked about something that's technically been canceled before. You know, like, this is an incomplete look into something that was supposed to be much bigger, but what we got, it was still so fascinating on its own. This is going to be, I'm really excited to talk about this with you.
Let's start at the beginning though, Tom.
It's a good place to start.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? How did you find out about PT?
Well, PT, I find out just through the internet hype machine in 2014. This was a PlayStation 4 release, so I didn't have a PS4. I could not play this. But when this blew up and people realized what it was, it made waves. How about you, Josh? And in addition to how you heard of it, can you kind of explain for the audience what I mean by what PT was?
So this just pretty much shadow dropped on the PlayStation Store. And it was in the demos, and people were like, what is this game? And so many people in my gaming sphere that I know were just talking about this horror game, this horror demo, or we didn't know what it was. It just randomly shadow dropped for free. And people were like, man, it is terrifying. It is scary. We have no idea how to play it. What is the premise of it? What is the purpose? But it was terrifying. And throughout the time of it being done, I think it took like a week or 2 weeks or something like that for someone to figure out how to actually beat it. And then when word got out what it was, the internet blew up. Like, it was one of those weird, one of those weird collaborations. And we talked about it a long time ago with Chrono Trigger, that it was three big head honchos of these just factions of different parts of media coming together to make a game. And when it revealed that it was Silent Hills, the world lost its mind.
Yes, a full-blown reboot or maybe reimagining of the Silent Hill franchise. And how about, you know, you did this for me on the Chrono Trigger episode. I'm going to give you the basketball team intro music. I need you to do the big three who are bringing this game. So hang on.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming down, the actor, you know him from The Walking Dead and the Boondock Saints, Norman Reedus. The writer, director of such cult classics like Hellboy and Hellboy 2, Guillermo del Toro. And you know him from the Metal Gear Solid franchise and Zone of Enders, Hideo Kojima.
Whoa, big three.
It's a huge three. Norman Reedus was pretty much riding that high of The Walking Dead going into
everywhere. He was the freaking Boba Fett of that show.
He's just crossbowing it all over the place.
Nothing against him, but yeah, the hype around his character when that show was still at its ratings peak.
Yeah.
Just putting Norman Reedus in a game like this was out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then you find out that it's being helmed by Del Toro, master of modern horror, and Kojima, master of cinematic gaming. Like, it's just like, holy poop. Just incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Josh. Whew.
Oh, Josh. Mm-hmm. I got to ask you. So, Silent Hill as a series.
Yes.
I got nothing on it.
Okay.
I'm aware of it. I've seen the first film adaptation,
which is great. It's a really good video game movie adaptation.
In terms of movies based off of video games,
which
I enjoyed.
I'm sorry, I got to go into this. Hits a very close place to home.
Tell him why. Tell him why this.
So
this
where
game
me
has
and
a
Tom
place.
Grew up, where me and Tom grew up, it's the movie. The game doesn't really take place based on this location, but close to where me and Tom grew up, there's a place called Centralia, and Centralia was actually the brainchild of the story for the movie itself. And honestly, from where we lived, it was like 10 miles down the road. Not even like we could get there in like 10, 15 minutes, like through some back roads, and we're boom, right in Centralia. And it was really cool because Centralia is a town that has a fire burning underneath it still to this day. And there's some really cool places out there that you can go and see, and you can, I mean, you can't really go to it anymore because they have it all blocked off because too many tourists are going to it. But in the winter time, you can see like the steam coming out of the ground from the fire that's still burning underneath the town and stuff like that. It's from like all the old mine shafts and stuff like, but yeah.
Fun fact, just real quick, because this is even closer to home for me. So Centralia, as Josh mentioned, has a fire burning underneath it. That's why the town is abandoned and evacuated, because the entire coal mine line, the coal vein, sorry, that runs under the town was set on fire in the 60s when the local fire department decided that in order to get rid of the local landfill, they would just dump all the trash into these open vents where the mine shafts came out. And they accidentally punted some burning garbage down there and created this underground fire. And you know who was on the board, the city board that recommended that decision?
Who?
My fiance's grandfather.
That's so even closer to home.
My fiance's grandfather is tied into the destruction of an American town and the birth of this creepy urban, you know, legend.
That's crazy. But now let's talk about Silent Hill.
Yeah.
So this was, you were either growing up a Resident Evil kid or a Silent Hill kid when it came to horror games.
Okay.
I was a Resident Evil kid, but I respected how creepy and scary Silent Hill was, because it was unlike anything at the time. There was an eeriness, the graphic horror into it. It was more survival. It was more psychological than Resident Evil was, very not actiony, but it was more like cliche zombie stuff. This was more okay. Let's break it down. Resident Evil, very similar to Night of the Living Dead, right? Very, very similar. Silent Hill had that kind of Hellraiser mentality to it, where it was like a demon, demonic, like different type of world. Like it was, that's the best way I can kind of remember it as a kid. Silent Hill 1, great game, ahead of its time when it comes to what it could do. Silent Hill 2, one of the greatest horror games ever made. I put it up there with Resident Evil 2. Silent Hill 3 was a sequel to the first one. Silent Hill 4 was titled Silent Hill 4, The Room. No relation to Tommy Wiseau. But then after that, it kind of went all over the place. Downward spirals and whatnot. But this was pretty much the resurgence of Silent Hill.
Yes. am not familiar gameplay-wise or experience-wise with Silent Hill, but I am familiar with the fact that after the kind of early 2000s boom that the series had with its mainline titles, it really started facing a dip in quality with all these offshoot titles that were released on, like, the Xbox 360 or the Wii. You know, it felt like this franchise had hit a wall, and fans were very vocal about, like, you know, we need to get back to what made the series great. We need to make the series good again. They felt that the psychological horror had given way to just a lot of, like, cheap jump scares and gore and monsters, and people just didn't want that. So
when you had games like, I hate to say it, but like Five Nights at Freddy's or Outlast and stuff like that coming out, all these, this resurgence of horror games.
Slender
Evil
Man?
Within, yeah, Slender, the Evil Within, the remakes of Resident Evil. You know what I mean? Like, there's a huge resurgence of horror games coming out. Amnesia was a part of that too, but this was like, this was their time to shine. And what better way to do it than to shock the world when with they knew that they had something so good that they just were like, you know what? Let's not tell anybody. Let's just put it out there and just see how people take it. And they took it and they ate it up.
So Josh, Hideo Kojima, running this production through his company, Kojima Productions.
Mm-hmm.
And what he basically wanted to do with PT, this playable teaser, that is what PT stands for. He said his goal was essentially he wanted to invent a brand new way to reveal video games. He felt that, you know, a pre-rendered trailer or screenshots would kind of be a little bit like, you know, like they would probably generate hype. But, you know, what's the best way you can sell your audience on something new, like in a different way? Well, I mean, the medium is video games. You get them to play it.
Yeah.
And that was his goal here. He wanted to make a game that was going to introduce you to a game.
Yeah. And it's crazy because when it came out, that was kind of when Twitch started hitting the big mainstream.
Okay.
So people were like eating it up. I remember people streaming it and people doing reaction videos and stuff like that on it. Online, which was getting the word out about this game more and more and more. However, do you know what sucks, Tom? When you buy your PlayStation 4 and then you realize 2 weeks before they took it off the PlayStation Network.
So Josh, in a bit of a twist on things, I think a lot of my notes about the history of this game are going to be better if you take us through the story first. Because then that'll contextualize what I found out about this game's development.
Okay, sure. So playing through the game, it's pretty much a continuous loop. And that's the best way to kind of describe this game. You start off in the first hallway and you make your way through the hallway and there's some chatter on the radio. And then you get to the end of the hallway, open the door, only to find yourself back into the same hallway.
And it's like an happens. L-shaped hallway, essentially, I'm holding up my hand in the reversed mirror webcam. Like, you start here, and you go up, and then you turn a corner, and there's, like, a little kind of lobby area of this nice upscale house that you're
little
in.
Vestibule.
And then, little vestibule, thank you, yes. And then you get to this door, and going through this door sends you back to this door.
Right. So, when you play through, and this is where a lot of my... the thought process of this game kind of takes over is you hear a lot of chatter on the radio, and the radio plays a big key part of this game itself. And the radio is talking about a father murdering their family. Right. And through the radio broadcast, as you constantly keep going through, you find out that there was two more families that were also murdered same way, but there was no connection to them. It was just something where the dad just lost it and killed the whole family. And the word that I think it's called familicide, which is like the terminology that they use for that in like actual psychological studies and whatnot. But it's all based off of problems that happen in the house from employment, childcare, or like social issues where a member of the family just loses it. And a very similar story to that is something along the lines of like the Amityville Horror.
Like the radio chatter very explicitly lays out everything you're doing. Like this reporter is not just telling the news report of a grisly murder that happened, the news reporter also waxes. He's like, what could have caused this? Could it have been a breakdown in family employment? Could it have been psychological depression? You know, like I was like, wow, news reporter, we're going to really, like, you know, get in on this.
Right. So as you keep going through, weird things are happening in the room. Every time you go through, there's several different loops that you can keep going through and doing. Sometimes a picture might fall over. Sometimes nothing happens at all. Sometimes a door opens or a door doesn't open. And when you go to open that door that's creaked open or something like that, someone grabs the handle and closes it on you. Right? Spooky stuff. Small, simple, spooky stuff. But what I think really sells the game in the horror aspect is how realistic everything looks. It actually looks like you are in a house. So you get a feeling of that you are safe or you are home or there's something eerie there.
Yeah, but, and could I speak to that? Because I think you're right. The production design of the level is incredible in that it feels so familiar. Like I think everybody has been in a house like this at one point or another. But the other thing is just the HUD, the design of the graphical interface. I assume you played this with everything left their defaults.
Mm-hmm.
They do a degree of like motion blur. And also, like, the camera wobbles with each step, you know, like, as if, like, the gait of this player is, like, the gait of this person that you're seeing through their eyes, like, makes them move. So it really creates this eerie offset of, like, I'm in somebody's actual shoes. And, like, when you whip around too fast in the dark, your eyes take a second to adjust because the motion blur is kicking in. So it's like, did I just see something? You know, oh.
Right, right.
It's, yeah.
Like, it's so weird, like, this house feels lived in. Like it does, it feels real. So there's a lot of things that happen in this game that I can't believe that we didn't know that it was Silent Hill, because the theme of Silent Hill is the theme of descent. You're just, you know, when you play a lot of games and you realize like, oh, I have to go down this hallway. And you're walking down like this staircase. And if you're playing Silent Hill 2, you guys know once you get to Historical Society, you enter in and you walk down and you are walking down a set of stairs for almost 2 minutes straight. And it's like, God, what is at the bottom of this? And it is that theme of descent, that you are descending deeper into someone's psychosis almost. And they use it as a way to almost like unlock memories in it.
Mm.
And if you think about the way that this game is and how you are talking or how you're being talked to by the radio or a fetus in the bathroom, like
yes, that's something that shows up.
The way that they're talking to you though is they're talking to you like it's about you, which it's almost like these things are unlocking memories of Norman Reedus's character, I guess we would consider him that. So you realize though that you are not alone in mm-hmm. these hallways, and mm-hmm. there is a young lady there named Lisa, who is not
more connections to the room for this franchise.
Fun fact about Lisa: she actually appeared in Metal Gear Solid Phantom Pain. She was like a decoy thing that would be thrown out in the ground, and she would pop up and people would like, and start shooting at her and stuff like that. So that's where the character model, and that's how they found out what the name was Lisa for it.
Okay. Nice. Nice.
But there's a lot of things with this that she's following you around and you see her at the end of hallways and then she disappears, or she's in doorways and not. Or like she's lurking behind you, and at one point in time she can kill your character.
Yes.
Right. You see her above in the rafters of the house looking down at you. Like you hear her, right? And it's just like, God, like it's so creepy, so realistic, and it's scary.
Yeah. And especially it's the escalation of what happens as you constantly go through the loop of this long hallway.
It's very maddening.
Yeah. As Josh mentioned, It starts out slow and you're either being taunted by this ghost or you're interacting with the environment. But the instances of what happens get crazier and crazier. He briefly mentioned at one point you find a crudely, horrifically misshapen fetus with like an almost like an alien, like a gray, you know, alien like big head in a sink. You keep going further. You see a refrigerator hanging from the ceiling, dripping blood with the sound of a child crying in it. You go further and further. Then the radio is like playing something backwards and it's talking to you and it's saying like, turn around. You don't want to turn around. Turn around. It's like playing reverse psychology with you. It builds and builds and builds and it makes the tension so incredible.
Yeah. I mean, when you're in the main room before you would enter into the hallway, like that little like padded, not the padded room, but the cement walled room, right?
Like a bunker. Almost. Yeah. Yeah.
There is scratch marks, like tally marks on the wall. And if you're in the room for a little bit, you can hear people scratching on the wall. And it's one through five all over the place. And it's, you know, thinking about that, is that how many times you've been in the room? Is that, you know, how long has this been going on in the room? There's also a bloody paper bag that talks to you. And it's, it says,
how did I miss that?
It's in the back corner, but it says something along the lines of like, I am all of me or something like that. But are you all of you? And like, there's like a theory out there thinking that like when Lisa kills you and knocks you down, you hear her unzip something from you. And it's like, did she cut something out of you and put it in the bag that it's talking to you? Is it a part of you now? Like there's so many different things that happen in this game. And it progressively gets worse and worse. There's a part where you find a picture and it says gouge it out or gouge out or something like that. And mm-hmm. you have to cut out the eye of a picture to get something, which it doesn't really ever tell you what it is, but you just do it.
And the picture bleeds.
Yeah. Isn't it weird that it's the same eye that Lisa's missing? Like there's so many small, simple things in this game. Are those pictures Lisa? Lisa doesn't have black hair in the pictures, but she does. Who knows? But as you keep going through, it's getting crazier and more stressful and more scary. And I think, honestly, the craziest part of this whole game really was when the hallway turned red.
The infinite hallway, and
the time sped up. And then you realized you had to go and look through the peephole.
Yeah, you find a picture off the wall. You look where it was, there's a hole, and you look through it, and you don't see anything, but you're looking into the bathroom, and you hear what sounds like an echo of a grisly murder that must have happened in this bathroom.
Right.
And it sounds awful.
Yeah. And I'm gonna get back to a lot of this murder stuff, because it's key parts to this story. And I'm so intrigued after doing so much more research into this game that like I'm more intrigued with this game now than I was 6 years ago. And I didn't think it was gonna hook me like this, but now I'm like, oh my god, like I feel like all those people who love Investigation Discovery or like the investigative murder stuff, like I'm like, God, I gotta figure out how to crack this right now.
We're a true crime podcast now. Josh is obsessed with murder.
But I don't know, man. Like,
well, how about this, Josh? Can you tell us how this all kind of culminates and ends just from the straightforward presentation? And we'll definitely get into theories later, but what's kind of the climax of all this madness?
So the climax, you have to get all these pictures, these pieces of this picture. There's six pieces and you can only find five. And when you go to leave the hallway, when you think you had all the pieces, the game resets and crashes on you.
Yep.
Very similar to a Psycho Mantis fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it kicks back on and you start at the beginning again. And then you can go and find the last piece, which is hidden. These pieces of the photo. If I didn't have a guide with me towards this, I would have never found any of this stuff.
Oh, we're going to talk about that.
But I don't know, like when you find the pieces, then you have to wait for the clock to turn to midnight officially. Chime twice. You need to take 10 steps towards the door. Then you hear a baby cry. You have to walk back to get to the phone. The baby cries two more times. And then I think you can go and leave. I think I might be missing something too, somewhere around there. But then you can leave. And when you do, you are treated to the trailer to the game. And yep. Who the hell figured this out?
Well, I will say this. So Kojima stated that he purposely tried to make this very difficult because he wanted players to take like a couple weeks to maybe crack this. He did not expect that what actually happened would happen in that players finished this game in a day and had it out on the internet, like, you know, within hours of it being released. He was like, what? I imagine the pictures, the torn up pieces of the pictures were part of that little like, ah, this will take them forever, you know?
Yeah.
So for some more than others, it took me, same thing. I had to use the guide that you provided. I was like, who would have figured this out?
Yeah.
Like just shut up.
Oh, you had the thing with the hello on the two walls where you had to constantly keep going and let it stop at hell. And I'm like, God, stop it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As we rambled on several times, it turned out to be a teaser for Silent Hills. But what's incredible about reading more of the development on my end that I did after playing this game is I got so much more appreciation for what the game does, seeing what their intent was. You know, first and foremost, Kojima's decision to set this in a kind of furnished modern house. He said that he chose to do that over, like, you know, a kind of decayed, rotted, haunted house like the Silent Hill franchise had seen in the past. He didn't want to put it in some kind of ruin because he said he wanted people to feel emotionally affected by the location, no matter what their cultural background was. You know, like this house was just familiar enough that you could get lost in it and it would actually like bug you, you know? And the repetition was done on purpose to kind of lull you in, you know? As humans, we can kind of settle into repetition. That was done on purpose. Almost every decision in this was made to psychologically suck you into this and then freak you out.
Yeah.
I think it's so smart. So Josh, something really interesting. Now we can talk and we will talk at length about our kind of theories about what PT was doing. But Kojima stated that basically nothing from this playable teaser was going to be canonical to the plot of the actual Silent Hills game. Basically, yeah. He said that like the gameplay mechanics and themes and mood and atmosphere were going to be built up from this teaser, and we would have gotten like, you know, the next evolution of that in the final game. But this is not meant to be like, if you play this and go, oh, I wonder what this would have connected to if Silent Hills hadn't been canceled. It wouldn't. This is just kind of like a first impression, not a prologue, you know?
I call bullshit on that one.
You really think?
I really do. And once we get into theories and once we get into ideas, because the whole thing is in this game right here, like, sure. Are you playing as Norman Reedus?
I have read that the character model within the actual playable thing, it is Norman Reedus's, right. like asset. Yeah,
right.
The asset
so
is
that's
based
the thing.
Off
it's him.
Him.
So why would they incorporate him into the end trailer if what's going on right now wasn't anything a part of him?
My assumption is that like the full Silent Hills game would have been just a unique story. A new unique story still involving him and still basing the character model. It's just that this was just meant to be a test run. You
right.
know, if you think about it, they used to do this a lot more in the mid 2000s, but you know, Pixar, their first teaser trailers for their movies were usually just one-off like sketches or things that didn't end up in the final movie. You know, the teaser trailer for Ratatouille, it's just him and his brother talking and that doesn't play into the movie at all. It's more just like, here's the characters, here's the concept, here's the world, but this isn't meant to be like the rest of it. So I just throwing it out there as like a, you know, an analogy.
I miss when Pixar did that.
I do too.
Okay.
Sticking kind of in the realm of movies, you know, we're just talking, got to get back to the fact that Guillermo del Toro, the Oscar-winning director, as you mentioned, of Hellboy and Hellboy 2, but also, you know, he directed Pan's Labyrinth, Chrono, Shape of Water, Crimson Peak. The dude's kind of like a modern horror legend.
Yep.
He is listed in the credits when this appears. But interestingly, he was specifically going to direct this game, which breaks my heart that this didn't happen even more. Because how many high-profile Guillermo del Toro projects were we robbed of in the last decade?
We really were.
He was supposed to direct the Hobbit trilogy. Nope. He was supposed to direct Silent Hills. Nope. And something maybe I knew this at a time, but he was going to direct a survival horror video game called Insane for THQ. And they were developing that, and then it got canceled in 2012. Hmm. And he's legitimately quoted in an interview with IGN as being like, Silent Hills being canceled broke my heart. And I think it's just because how many things he's gotten really excited to be involved in and yeah. Swoop, snatched away. I don't blame him if he was heartbroken. Like, yeah. It's kind of just not fair.
It's very robbed. Very robbed.
Yeah. Are you a fan of his work? I'm over here fanboying. But
yeah, I do like his work. I've seen both Hellboy movies and I love them. I have not seen Shape of Water. I saw part of Pan's Labyrinth. I really like him. And we are going to be watching in the next like day or two, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
He produced that. Yeah,
which is a lovely, lovely children's book.
All those were great back in the day. Getting them from the school library.
Yeah. But I love Guillermo. I love him. Yeah. He's a wonderful person. I don't know him personally. If you want to be my friend, though, you can.
GDT. I love thee. But anyway, Kojima, being a big movie buff himself, I'm sure he was excited to work with Del Toro. And Kojima even mentioned, you know, this game was inspired a lot by horror movies that he loves. I felt there were big Shining vibes in this, you know, just wandering through some kind of haunted place and not knowing what's going to happen. And I don't know if you've ever seen the David Lynch movie Eraserhead, but part of that movie involves a misshapen, deformed baby. And when I saw the baby in the sink, I was like, oh no, it was like that. So that got me. But you know, Josh, it's just like this game had all the right players working on it. It seemed like it had everything going for it. And as we talked about further back, just the atmosphere and the design of this demo or game or whatever we're going to end up calling it when we talk about it was so good. This could have been something spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah, it could have been. Or it was. Well, we'll get to that then.
Yeah.
So let's jump in, though. Let's talk a little bit about just what some little things throughout the game. OK,
yes.
So I talked about the radio, and I think the radio is really what plays a key part in it. Those of you who played Silent Hill, you already know the radio plays a big part in Silent Hill. If the radio, you hear static, that means that there's something close by. Something not from this world or something from Silent Hill. But the radio starts off by talking about a story of a man killing his wife. He goes out to his car where he just bought a rifle. He just bought a rifle a couple days ago, goes out to his car, grabs it, comes in, shoots his wife in the kitchen. 10-year-old son walks into the kitchen, boom, shoots his kid.
Not to make this more upsetting, but the son was 5.
Son was 10.
That's what... Oh, was it? I could have sworn it was lower.
Some was 10 because it goes into like an overall theory theme that I have.
Okay. I'm sorry I wanted this to be more morbid. I'm sorry, Josh.
That's fine. The daughter goes and hides in the bathroom. The dad lures the daughter out saying that they were just joking around and everything's all fine, giving her a false sense of comfort. And then when she comes out and she believes him, boom, done. Right. Then the police found the man talking and saying the code 204863. 204863. And in the game, the radio says this several times. Right. And there was something, I believe, earlier in one of the other murders that they mentioned the same code. But the code has no meaning inside the game, which is so weird. It's not a part of a puzzle. It's not a trick, not anything like that, right?
Right, right.
So the father was found in the car listening to the radio. However, on the radio, there's two different voices, and you can definitely tell the tonage of the voices. One person is a very smooth talking radio host talking about the murders, and then the other one's a little bit more like persistent, a little bit more rough, a little bit more direct when they're talking. And then there's one you can't make out. And the one that you can't make out has been referred to as the Swedish ghost. Hey, everybody. Future Josh here. As I was recording this episode, I realized that I kind of go on like a crazy rant right now. And you'll notice once I come out of this part of the video here that Tom is going to be a little bit worn down from what I was talking about, because I kind of go on this whole big crazy rant and it's a little bit much. So what I'm going to do is, in the description of this video, I'm going to put a link to a group called The Great Debate, and they actually have an episode called PT's Hidden Meaning. And that's where a lot of my theory and stuff like that comes from, this, because I think they hit on a lot of great things when it comes to the message or theories inside of PT itself. So go over there, give them a good watch, and maybe, you know, might get some extra ideas of what PT means or what the story was going to be about. But let's take it on back to past Josh and Tom.
That was certainly a lot.
It was. And I'm gonna break it down easier for the listeners.
And it was all very interesting, I'm not gonna lie. I think it makes me look at a couple pieces of the narrative in a different way. I'm gonna honestly say that I didn't go that deep on it. And, you know, my interpretation is not that the player character, Norman Reedus, is not maybe in any way necessarily connected to anything that had been happening. I think we're witnessing somebody who is, like us, diving into some kind of larger thing that he's being dragged into, or that maybe he's been recruited into solving. Because here's the key thing. Towards the end of the game, something important that gets brought up that I don't believe you mentioned is, like, after you kind of like solve the puzzle of the house, before you go out the front door, one of the last things that happens is that the phone in the house rings. And when you answer it, it says, "You've been chosen." And then you leave. And the voice that says "you've been chosen," it sounds like the voice actor who was voicing the fetus, and then who also does the voiceover, right, saying, like, "I'm coming back" at the end, right?
Right.
And when Norman Reedus finds the fetus in the one instance and it talks to him, it kind of tells him a story in a little bit of a way that it's like, not like you're reminding someone of something they know. It seems like he's telling him something for the first time. And so what I'm basically getting at is, like, my kind of theory on this is that Norman Reedus's character may be a third party through maybe some supernatural circumstances, is trying to solve, you know, what is the connecting factor behind all these murders. Like, the murders do seem like there is a pattern there with the code, with how grisly they were, with, you know, their timing and all that. He's looking at the people, and the audio that we're hearing of this murder cannot possibly be the murder of the family with the gun. This Correct. Is clearly some kind of knife.
So, it was the other, you know, yeah, the other murder that was talked about. Like,
yeah, right. So I think this was like Norman Reedus is like some kind of supernatural conduit, and he is receiving a calling to investigate. And maybe, you know, that's what he's going to Silent Hills for. I don't know. I agree. The game does play a lot in, like, this, like, alternate dimension, alternate reality thing, because even the opening lines, you know, there's some text at the beginning over black that's just like, the gap in the door is the gap between our world and another reality.
Right.
So that's what I kind of lean towards in kind of assuming what the overall goal of PT was.
Yeah, and I know I went way too crazy into it.
It's all good. Hey, I'm not judging. Yeah,
I like where you're going. I like your mindset to it. It is an alternate, a different take on Silent Hill.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about Silent Hill, though, you don't get to just go to Silent Hill.
Okay.
You are chosen to go to Silent Hill for a particular reason. And the only people who go to Silent Hill have done something bad.
Oh.
And it's every single time. Everyone who has ever gone to Silent Hill has gone there because they've done something bad, or they've experienced something super tragic, and they were a part of something bad as well.
Okay.
So,
well, having the familiarity with
correct,
the franchise.
Correct.
Right. Gotcha. Okay.
So it's, and it's one of those things that Silent Hill always plays on your, on the twisted reality of what's real, what's not. There's a whole thing that it's, maybe it's just something wrong with the person, but at the same time, then there's the people that are there are the ones that are dying, not by you, by other things.
Gotcha,
and
gotcha.
It's one of those things, like, is the person going crazy or does this place actually exist and whatnot? Like, you know, looking at the movie does a really good job at breaking down that there's two different realities. There's the reality with the mom and the daughter, and then there's the reality with Sean Bean. And we all want to be in the reality with Sean Bean. Hence,
I don't
also,
want to be in
also, can I just say the Silent Hill movie is one of the only movies that Sean Bean does not die in.
He makes it. Yep, he makes it out.
So... I don't know, man. Like, I'm so intrigued by the story, right? Like, and I don't know. It's just
well, it's very open-ended, and I think that's what's generated a lot of conversation around this game, is the fact that you can come to the table with your own interpretation and really get a lot out of talking to other people who have played it, you know? It impacts everybody, I think, in a very unique way. And that's something special, you know? Like, that's something special in video gaming that I really admire. Just gotta say it.
What if... This is a super crazy theory to think of. What if the game was never really meant to come out?
This is all a giant trick.
Like, what if? Like, because we always talk about, oh, Konami's, you know... We've never heard the story on either end.
Well... Can we talk about Konami for a bit? Because I think...
Let's talk about pachinko machines.
Yeah, we mentioned we were going to get to the lows. So this game comes out, like we said, under the radar. It was released under a studio called 7780 Studios, which they did purposely to hide what it really was. Everyone figured out what it was. And then Konami's falling out with Hideo Kojima happened. This occurred throughout the middle of the decade. And it basically was this weird divorce between a creator and his longtime studio.
And we were the kids.
And we were the kids. I don't really know all the details. I've heard smatterings of things. I think it came down to Kojima was a bit of an egomaniac with his projects. I mean, he does put his name all over everything that he's involved in. And Konami was just like, you're too difficult to work with. We just want to make money off of our properties. We don't want to deal with this anymore. So, you know, he was infamously booted off of Metal Gear Solid 5, and that game was released in an incomplete state. And Silent Hills was just straight up canceled. They shut the whole thing down. And then almost a year and change after its release, PT was delisted from the PlayStation Store. And people lost their minds.
Yeah, like I said, I got it. I got my PlayStation 2 weeks after it got delisted.
My simpies. Yeah. But... people were trying to sell PlayStations with PT pre-installed on them on eBay for thousands of dollars. eBay took that down because I guess part of their policy is you have to wipe any technology you're selling. And I found that out by being reminded that when Flappy Bird got delisted, people were trying to sell phones with Flappy Bird pre-installed. So yeah, this game just disappeared and it has resurfaced a couple times. There was a fan recreation in, I think, 2016 that Konami, you know, sued into oblivion. And then, Josh, the version we played is actually a 2019 recreation of the game made in Unreal Engine with, I believe, almost all of the original assets.
Yeah, and it's very, very close.
Like, I played the game via the way we got it, and I'm not going to say how, and then I went on YouTube to just watch some stuff, and I was like, oh, this looks exact. Like, good job, whoever.
Yeah.
You did terrific. So that's the only really way you can play this game at the moment is to kind of watch gameplay footage or to, find a way to play it unofficially.
Which is really funny because on Twitch, if you go to, like, stream PT, because I was going to say, like, oh, because the one that we got is called Unreal PT.
Sure. Made in the Unreal Engine.
Yep. And if you go to Twitch and you type in PT, the first thing that pops up is Unreal PT. So, like, that's the one that you, like, even Twitch recognizes that's the way to play PT right now.
Like, there you go.
It's just cool.
And I'm glad
people have remade it in Dreams on the PlayStation. And then
that's what it was.
Yeah. Well, there was Allison Road, which was another recreation. There was like four or five different like alternative versions that people made to try to recreate this game.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, it is crazy. We will never probably know. This is going to be one of the greatest urban legend type myth things that happen in gaming that we're just never going to know. Same thing as you're never going to see the Banjo 3E. You know what I mean? Like, it's
never going to see Mega Man Legends 3. Never going to see so many.
Right.
But Josh, something I want to ask you, and this is a big question. Is this a teaser, like in a teaser trailer? Is this a demo, or is this a full-fledged video game? Because I feel like there is a debate about that.
There is. And I'll be honest with you, I will consider this a video game.
I 100% agree. I think this is honestly just it's an interesting form of playable marketing, but it is a video game with a beginning, middle, and an end.
Yeah.
And, you know, just considering that Kojima said that this was not going to canonically tie into Silent Hills.
Standalone.
To me, that means this is a standalone game.
Yeah, I think because the game, honestly, if you go through and you don't, I mean, if you pay attention to every single thing, take it all in, the game takes you almost like an hour, hour and a half to fully beat. If you know what you're doing, know what you're looking for, how to go into each room, it takes you about 13, 15 minutes, something quick, sure. Right?
Okay.
You figure a minute for each lap that you're doing. But yeah, I mean, like, I would consider it a full, because it's an experience. I believe it is a game because it's very similar to like we talked about with Pixar. Before every Pixar movie, there's another like movie in front of it, right? Yeah. That's not a trailer. That's not a teaser. That has a beginning, middle, and end, right? Sometimes it's heartwarming. Sometimes it's actually, I think they're all really heartwarming. Unlike this, which is the complete opposite of heartwarming.
Yeah.
But they're not teasers for anything. They're not showing you, oh, well, look at the, you know, the graphical difference between this or whatnot. These are people who want to get a story out there, succeeded, and left you feeling something after it. And that's what this did. It made you feel unease. It made you scared, because this game is very unsettling. It is scary, and it is it's an experience.
Josh, this is easily one of the most uncomfortable video gaming experiences I've had in quite some time. Very anxiety inducing, very uneasy, and oof. I think it would be safe to say that this is the scariest of the games we've played for this spooky games month, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yeah, this is one of the scarier games that I've played, and I give it a lot of credit for that. It is not the scariest game I've ever played. I will say I've gone into our Twitch stream and I've talked about it. I think one of the scariest games, and actually I talked about it last year. I think Blair Witch Project is probably one of the scariest games I've ever played, because it's one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. And then in that game makes you participate in one of the scariest movies
yep.
you've ever seen. Like, I think this is really close, because there was a lot of times playing this, as I was playing, the hairs on my arm were standing up. I was getting goosebumps. I was getting those chills. And when a game hits you like that and leaves that type of an impression on you, like, you know that it succeeded in something, and you need Absolutely, to give it the credit yeah. for that.
Absolutely. You got to recognize greatness when you experience it.
Do you think you would have played Silent Hills if it came out?
Absolutely, I would have.
Yeah.
Based off this, yeah. I'm sold. I'm still sold on it. If it ever happens, I'm already pre-sold.
So I know there's a lot of talk that PlayStation's thinking about buying Konami properties. Same way Microsoft
just bought
Bethesda.
Yeah.
They're thinking about buying Silent Hill, Metal Gear, and Castlevania.
That'd be pretty dang big.
And that's, I mean, that would be huge. That would be huge to buy those. And then do you think if they buy it, they would put Kojima a part of...
Absolutely, because, you know, PlayStation welcomed him with open arms for Death Stranding. I think that Kojima and Konami both have a very PlayStation-centric identity. The Metal Gear games were some of the biggest killer apps for PlayStation consoles for years. Same with Silent Hill. You know, before they started going to other consoles, they made their biggest impact on PlayStation consoles first. And I know Castlevania started on Nintendo, but it really reinvented itself and saw some of its bigger titles in the Sony camp. If Sony did buy them, I think it would just make the most sense in the world. And I absolutely think Kojima would be willing to maybe pick this up again. Here's just hoping he can get Del Toro and Reedus to come back with him.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Do you got any final thoughts here on Silent Hills / PT?
Play it however you can find it. Play it in a dark room with over-the-ear headphones on. You're going to have quite the trip. Josh?
Yeah, I highly recommend it. I really enjoyed my experience with it, and I wish that this could get out to everybody. I wish this is something I think if you are a gamer or you are a fan of experiences or showing people just new experiences in gaming and what gaming can do, this is a great way to introduce something fun to people. Like, it's just like when somebody grabs a VR headset. And the fact that this also came out in VR, too, is terrifying.
The version on Unreal PT, yes, can be played in VR, yeah.
But, I mean, it's just like when you have VR, though, you want to show it off to people. And this is a game that if I had a PlayStation with this on it, hell, even if with the PC here, like, I would show this to people and have them experience this game in the most realistic and natural way possible to enjoy it. So I highly recommend it, and I'm very sad that we will not see anything from this in the future.
Here's hoping that turns out to be wrong. But for now, this has been Tom
and Josh, and we'll see you in the future. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with the Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.